Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Welcome to Modcast. It's Saturday, the 23rd of February 2019. I'm Rob 8XFT, and with me today are...
I'm Jan, hello.
Lee S.
Nerai the Forgiven.
The Crazy Scotsman.
Okay, welcome everybody. We'll move on then to Mappa Monday. Who can tell us about that?
All right, well, that would be me.
Hiya.
Mappa Mundi is a mod that... Oh, let me back up. When the Gathering Storm was announced, one of the features I was most excited about was the named places on the map. I know that might be silly, but I just feel like it adds so much flavor. I love looking at and exploring the map, and so I decided I wanted to try to expand it. Firaxis has about a little bit over 600 named places specified in the files, but there are obviously thousands upon thousands of rivers and mountains and volcanoes, all around the globe. So I thought it would be a lot of fun to increase the diversity of that so that you get something different in every game. And so I started working on a Python script to scrape the place names from Wikipedia because I did not want to try to get all of those manually.
That's not like...
So I worked on that, and then when I figured out what the final kind of format that Firaxis was going to use for him, I finished that up, and I just released an update actually to Mappa Monday that brings the total unique count up to a little bit over 16,000 place names. The vast majority of those are rivers, I think for obvious reasons, but there are well over 1,000 mountain ranges, 1,000 volcanoes, and there's several hundred deserts as well. And I decided I wanted to try to make it as easy to use as possible, so I incorporated basically I can include out-of-the-box support for any modded civilization just by assigning features to that modded civilization, and it only inserts the feature if the civilization exists in the game. So yeah, that's kind of I've been away from Civ 6 modding for a while, and this was kind of my return to it, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
So here's the inevitable question, of course. Does your Python script differentiate between different civs or whatever? Because I'm assuming that you're going to run into this thing where, okay, now I'm grabbing place names and I need place names for the Kree. Oh, great.
Yeah, that's a problem. So the Python script is, I tried not to make it overly complicated because, you can spend a ridiculous amount of time trying to automate things, which automation, my philosophy is that it can kind of get you 70 to 80% of the way there. And then if you try to automate the rest of it, you get rapidly diminishing returns. And so what I do is Wikipedia has this great feature where they have category pages and category of categories and lists of lists. Basically, they're just pages which are lists of geographical features that belong in whatever that category is. So for instance, there's one meta category, which is rivers by country. And in that meta category, there is almost about 200 subcategories, which is rivers of Germany, rivers of Israel, or rivers of et cetera, et cetera. And so what my script does is it grabs all of those subcategories and then grabs all of the features from each of those subcategories. And so what it'll do is it'll assign an origin country to each of the features.
Right.
Because of the automation that is dependent upon modern day boundaries, of course. So having to go in and find, it can't find like a lot of indigenous features. It can't find like ancient features because those aren't recorded by modern day boundaries. So a lot of that is something that I'm planning on adding more of in the future because that's going to be a manual process. But right now it'll have, at least 2,000 features are from Germany. So what I'll do is I'll say, okay, well, what countries can use those features? So for instance, for all of the features in like the Ukraine, I've simultaneously assigned them to Russia, to Scythia, to JFD's USSR, if that exists, to Merrick's Kievan Rus, if that exists in the game. And so one of the nice things that Firaxis has done is that you can assign the same feature to multiple civs, and if the first civ that grabs it basically locks it out from all the other civs. So it'll only occur once, but you can assign it to any number of civs, which is really nice for the civilizations, which are all historically all on top of each other. But yeah, indigenous place names are a challenge, which really can't be done via automation.
I think the problem there is that Wikipedia needs to up their Colonius Legacies game.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, the obvious question I was going to ask is, are you using the unpronounceable place names like the ones for Icelandic volcanoes?
Of course. The more of those, the better.
And that just ties into the other day when I was playing the game I've been playing to play around with the Gathering Storm. I'm moving my scout around and I find this River Avon, River Tyne, whatever, and then River Quatsik Black McNicknack Front. Oh, I just met Monty.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Actually,
Monty's up here somewhere.
I have a totally off-comment thing to make, statement to make, although I'm going to ask you, Crazy Scottman, also if this is your experience as well, having done all this language stuff. So last weekend, I ended up going to a local museum, and they had this display of First Nations cultures, about six or seven of them. And the way they had built this display, it was in this circular room, and they really didn't tell you any boundaries. They did this on purpose, although I thought that was a little bit dumb, in my own opinion. But you were, like, you'd be looking at Blackfoot, and you'd kind of go to the right, and then it would switch into Dene, but it wouldn't tell you that it was switching into Dene. But as I was looking at this, I could see the languages for Cree, for Dene, for Blackfoot, because they would have things in languages. In fact, one of the things that I thought they did that was really nice was they had the language translated into English and French, of course, because this is Canada, but they also had it in the language of the people that they were showcasing. But having done all of the mods, I could actually very quickly say, okay, I've switched into Dene right now because I recognize that this is a different language that, and I recognize which language it is, even though I can't read a word of it. But just to kind of know that, hey, the one with all the T's and Y's and N's in this string, that's Blackfoot. And then this over here is Dene because it's got, you know, different things. And this one over here is, it's also got like non-Roman characters in it. So that makes it Lakota, that sort of thing, right? And I was like, Crazy Scotsman, how often do you run into that where you're like, oh, I actually know which language this is supposed to belong to because I've seen way too many darn languages.
Yeah, that definitely happens. I'd say the most recent example, I just added a whole bunch of rivers from Romania. There's somebody on Wikipedia has cataloged thousands of rivers in Romania, but you can tell very quickly by looking at the names that, oh, this belongs in Romania. But that was one of my goals with it, was I didn't want it to be as immediate, because if you take, you know, only the big names for geographical features, then a lot of people are familiar with those, and so they'll be able to say, oh, well, I know exactly who that is. One of my goals by adding a whole bunch more diversity into it was to make it less immediately obvious who was in the game. You know, even though as you become more familiar with the languages, that becomes easier to figure out. But when you encounter an obscure river name from, you know, the middle of Australia, or, you know, you might not be sure, well, is that Australian? Is that English? Is that, could be Maori? You know, it's a whole bunch of different things, which, I mean...
You mean you don't like the fact that you can kind of just cheat by...
Yeah.
Or the one that I always used to use is turning on the loyalty tab, and you could see loyalty flowing into your cities from people that you didn't know with their icons attached to them.
I don't particularly like that. One of the things that I did add in is an option to turn on colonial names as well, since obviously some European civs were heavy colonizers. So it's off by default, but there's about 1,500 names in there which are colonial names. And so if you turn it on as England, you might get names from Kenya, Tanzania, you know, all throughout Africa, Caribbean. As the Netherlands, you might get names from South Africa, other places. And so that's a way to also kind of, at least for the civilizations which most people would be most familiar with, the, you know, more European civilizations, that might be a way to kind of add some variety as well.
Now, you just said something here that I thought was a little bit backwards from how I was thinking it in my head, so I just want to clarify. You had said if you turn on colonial names and you're playing as England, you start seeing names from the colonies.
Right.
It's not the other way around. Like, it's not like, okay, if I'm playing as Zulu, that I turn on colonial names and I start seeing names from the colonizers.
Well, that's...
Or is that just going to happen anyway? Because there's really
that's
no
just
going to
happen
that.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many place names everywhere throughout the world that have been decided unilaterally by colonizing powers that it can't be kind of automatically sifted out like that. And so that might be something which is worth doing manually in the future, is kind of going through and, you know, adding some additional flags to place names created by colonizers in the colonies. But that's just not kind of within the realm of possibility right now for me.
I'd also say thank you for building in Anno Domini names in there as well.
Of course.
That was really kind of you. It's curious, and I know we're going to speak about Anno Domini in a moment, but the curious thing is, if you play with Mappamundi on its own, it crashes the mod. If you play with Luigi's cities, you know those fantastic cities that he did, it crashes the mod. But if you play with both of them together, they seem to cancel each other out in terms of crashing. It works. I just can't fathom out why that is. It just seems crazy. You'd think it would, if it's not going to work with one, you'd think it
wouldn't work with one and other things with it. But it's like, it just seems bizarre somehow. I can't work it out why that is.
Maybe there's a cross-dependency in them. Like maybe somehow they're referring to each other. I don't know.
Well, maybe, but, you know, and that resolves the crash with Anna. I don't know.
That's really weird, yeah.
It seems really, really strange. So, anyway, so Anno Domini then. Is going to talk about that. Oh, me. So I've had, as you know, I've done Anno Domini for Civ 5 and Civ 3 previously, and I had uploaded to the forums a basic sort of Anno Domini for Vanilla and for Rise and Fall, but this time I really sort of took some time out to create something that would work with Gathering Storm and uploaded it. It's had a couple of thousand people that have subscribed so far, so far so good. As for those of you who don't know what Anno Domini actually is, it's a complete conversion based in the ancient age, goes from the dawn of time up until the rise of Rome. It has ancient civilizations only, and it's also ancient texts, ancient buildings, everything's kind of ancient, I would say. It's got about as much as the Epic game would have in it in terms of the number of texts, number of buildings, etc., only everything set in the years before the fall of Rome. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. The community's been so kind in donating civilizations and other stuff that they've created themselves, so there's some of the city states that you've done, Crazy Scotsman as well, and some bits and bats, bits of code here and bits of code there that have been so useful. They've been kind enough for me to actually integrate those civilizations into the mod itself directly, so people don't have to, you know, go and seek that civilization out. But equally, it gives me the opportunity that I can make sure that everything sort of works together, rather than having to worry about any codependencies or somebody deciding they're going to stop having the game on Steam or whatever. At least it's all there in one go, which kind of like. So yeah, that's kind of it. There's some work going on this week, well, some off work, to try and just sort out some minor issues with the mod. I think that you'll all find this, I guess, because 2,000 subscribers is great, but it's not as many as quite a lot of the other mods. But you find that people will complain about one thing that it doesn't work for them, and I think the more people that subscribe, the more you can think it must be down to your setup, and you must have had that before. The other thing, of course, is that in terms of people commenting on the mod, it's been largely positive, but any complaints have been things like, why didn't you put in Civ X, Y, or Z, or why didn't you use that leader? Which I guess Firaxis get every time they bring out an expansion. There's been a couple of people say that I shouldn't have made all the, you know, some of the DLC necessary for it, to have had the Nubia and Macedon and Persia. But you know what? If they can't be bothered to buy the, or can't be bothered, it's their choice whether or not they want to buy the DLC. That's fine. You know, that's up to them. They can't then complain that I've used the DLC to create the mod. So they've got a choice there. It really is their choice. But you can't just take out, like, for example, if you look at the Persian Macedonia, the Macedon, you've got two massive civs there. You've got Alexander the Great, yeah, and you've got, you know, Cyrus the Great as well. You can't just ignore those as a mod maker. In addition, with the unit attachment system, some of the elements of the units have been used in other units that I've created, so it's not as easy as just saying you can't have Persia, because if you can't have Persia, then you can't have certain other elements within the game that I've used. And likewise with the Nubia Civ. So it's not really practical what they're suggesting, really. And to say, you know, for some people to say, I love the Ancient Age, but I'm not buying Macedon and Persia, well, probably you don't love the Ancient Age then, you know?
You're just then having to tie your hands. There's all sorts of tools that you're saying, yeah, well, I'm just not going to use these tools.
Yeah, exactly. And it's there to... I shouldn't be, and this goes for any mod maker. No mod maker should be restricted by somebody else's opinions as whether or not DLC is the thing to buy or not. They should be able to go in and say, look, this is what's available, because, as you know, as we mentioned before, we haven't got access to some of the assets anyway to create everything, so it's hard enough as it is. I'm not Sucre, you know, I can't go and suddenly create new stuff. Come on. And you know, it's only $5, isn't it, for these downloads, and they've been 75% off sometimes, so, and will be in the future, I'm sure. So
Hey, that's my little rant.
I did similar when I got back to modding. I asked myself the question pretty early on, do I want to maintain compatible versions for all sorts of combinations of this expansion being active or this being active? And I figured if people really want more content, and if they really love the game so much that they just can't get enough and they look at mods and want everything and want to try new stuff, then most of them will have the DLC anyway, because that's the natural first choice when you look for more content, right? And sooner or later there will be more gold editions, sales, and whatever. Most people will just have those expansions in a long time, and as you said, there's not just the civilizations themselves, but also tools in there that we need to use. So I figure...
I agree with you. I mean, it's like, who now worries about, Civ 4 and Civ 5, what sort of levels everyone has, because you assume that people have got the full suite of things if they really want to play.
I say this every time this topic comes up, which I think is every modcast, is that there is sort of like this legal gray area where mods live in, and one of the ways that we can help keep Firaxis and their owners, 2K, from dropping a whole bunch of lawyers on us and shutting down the Steam Workshop is by helping them sell their game, right? So I think the worst idea is when you see these mods that say, oh, I'm gonna backport Alexander into vanilla.
Yeah.
So you don't have to spend your money to, and you don't have to support 2K, and you don't have to help them get rich off of the work that they have rightfully put into this and the hard work that they've done. That's the worst kind of a mod from making us become a stench in their nostrils, I guess. Whereas a mod that says, no, go buy Gathering Storm. I want you to buy Gathering Storm. I want you to buy all the DLCs. You really should. They put hard work into this stuff, and our mod is riding on top of the closest wave, and is it some sort of free marketing for them? The best kind of way to prevent them from deciding in 6 months' time that, you know what, mods are too risky, let's not port it. And I mean, I would suggest, although I don't have any way of knowing this, I'd suggest that one of the reasons we don't have assets for expansions is the fear that somebody is going to try to backport all those assets and then try to build I think Rise and Fall is more at risk of that, where you might be able to build your own era system and then backport era. I think that you would find it very, very hard to backport Gathering Storm into vanilla. But it is still that idea, especially when there's this kind of ludicrous idea that a full-fledged expansion should not cost $40. You know, there's at least this contingency of Gathering Storm is too expensive. It's just a downloadable content. Why does it cost $40? Which I don't understand where that comes from. But besides that point, I think that's one of the reasons. Like, there's this perception that, oh, somebody's going to make a vanilla Gathering Storm mod if you let them have your assets, so we're not going to let modders use it. And that's just damaging. We really want you to run everything. Especially because without Gathering Storm, there's no Lua attached modifiers. So none of us want to go back to that dark age.
Yeah, well, to go back to the point Rob was making about, you know, don't bother me that you didn't buy this particular DLC. Back in Civ 5, I tried to make the decision that I was only ever going to do anything that was B&W compatible, and none of this, can you make a vanilla version? And I kind of moved off of that when I got enough people asking me, can you make a vanilla version? But for Civ 6, if I'm going to make a Gathering Storm version of something, I'm not going to go strip it out and try to come up with how to make it vanilla compatible and which components have to be pulled back out, because it's just way too much work, because now you got 2-3 versions you have to update every time there's a patch or every time you discover a problem. And then the other problem is, I don't know. I don't remember. There was something else that was on my head before. Asking a mod maker to have multiple different versions of the same mod, that's just a mess.
And
I agree with Rob Foley. It's like, if you don't want to buy the DLC, that's your choice. But don't ask me to jump through all these hoops to conform to, you know, this combination of what DLC you have and what DLC you don't have, and whether you have the expansion and whether you don't have the expansion.
What I did originally was one of the reasons why I created Anno Domini when it first came out, when Civ 6 first came out, was I knew that this was going to come up, this situation. So I can just go back to them and say, play that. If you don't want to buy the DLC, that's absolutely your choice. If you don't want to buy the expansion pack, and to say you are making me buy the new, I'm not making you buy anything at all. I'm just saying that if you want to play this version of the game, you're going to need the Nubia DLC, and you're going to need the Mastodon DLC. There is a version where you don't have to, but actually, compared to this version, it's very, very basic. So I don't expect me to come back and start fixing that version and making that as good as it can be based on what we know from expansion packs. This is the version now. This is what's current. This is what's available. You wouldn't have somebody say to you, oh, you've got an app that only works with the latest iOS phones. Can you make it work with my Nokia? You know, but we haven't talked about the mod.
I was going to say, so what's new in Gathering Storm, Anno Domini?
What's new in it
it? Well, that's a very good question, because it's got everything that it previously had. So it's got like all the ancient texts, and it's got all the ancient buildings, etc.
Sorry, let me interject for a second too. If you have never played Anno Domini, what Rob has done with the tech tree is you're just going to have to play it to see, because the tech tree, the philosophy behind it, the way technologies work, the way that buildings and districts work are completely renovated, completely different. You will, you know, it's a completely different tech game.
No, thank you for mentioning that, because one of the points that you make there is, you know, that's just reminded me of one of the things that is new. For example, towards the end of the first area, you get a pottery district, which you don't get in the main game, and you've got to have that to be able to get your granary going, and there's a pottery shop which gets you a bit of culture that's attached with that, and later on you can buy the amphora trader in that district. So it does a few different things, and also a built-in within that two routes you could go down for the religious route, because Koch did the Egyptian district.
Yeah, the religious district. Amun-Ra, I think.
That's the one, yeah. So I've made that available to all civilizations, but also the holy site available to all civilizations. So you can only have one or the other. You can't have both. They're mutually exclusive. But you have different buildings that you can put in, and it's just slightly different what you get out of that, you know, with those religious buildings. So there's that, because you can't, on the holy site ones, you can use your buildings that you get through the religion,
right.
Whereas on the Amun-Ra one, you get another building that you can use that isn't one of those. So you do get to use that third slot if you haven't got a religion.
Right. Okay, so it's almost like better for you if you're not...
Yes. If you've not chosen that particular... You might have a religion, but you might not have chosen to have a building as one of the elements of it. You might have chosen something else. Or you might not be a leader of a religion, but you want to build up the faith so that you can go off and kill some rock band somewhere. You know, but you know what I'm saying, really, there.
You have almost like a split between the, I don't know what I want to call it, maybe this is a little bit over the top, but you almost have like this organic-ish religion. That's the normal one. You're huddling around in stones, you're looking at the sky, you're doing whatever. And then you have this more organized, but not necessarily viable in that sense. I don't want to say that as in like a balanced sense, but rather just as a, like a kind of a, this is not a religion that's going to go out and it's going to go and convert the masses. This is a religion that is more going to create lasting temples to the religion and just stay there.
I mean, what I'm saying to you there is that with the holy site, they're restricted with their third building to whether or not you've got one of the religious buildings as one of the parts of your religion. Whereas if you go down the Amun-Ra route, you can't use one of those buildings, but equally you can get something else that's as good. So it depends on whether or not you've chosen to have buildings. You've got the two different routes there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Good.
Once again, I mean, like I had said before, this is a testament to the fact that when you're playing Anno Domini, the whole concept of this, of how the tech trees work, like, don't, if you're listening and you've never played Anno Domini, don't get the idea that it's just, oh, we rebranded all of the components in the tech tree, and the tech tree is basically the same. It's an extremely different experience going through the tech tree. Multiple paths, some sort of like upgradability concept and stuff like that. Just like, and because a tech tree is like a huge pillar of Civ, it's just such a different experience.
There's also some of the unit lines that you get, which you wouldn't have in the main game. So you've got three or four lines of slingers. You've got three lines of chariots, you know, that improve as the early game goes on. And I've got to give a quick shout out to Deliverator here, because with him releasing the Civ 5 units, that just gave me enough extra unique looking units to actually put in to do all of that. So hopefully I'll be filling in some of the slots as well with some homemade units soon. So that'll be quite good. Also, within the policy side of things, I've done something where effectively I've stolen from JFD essentially. So you don't get wildcard slots in mine as such, although they are essentially wildcards. I know, sorry, you do get wildcard, but diplomacy is chucked in with wildcard, I should say, instead of getting its own bracket. And what I've done with what was diplomacy's bracket is I've created a new class of policy, which is the social policies. And so the social policies really deal with religious and cultural kind of things. Okay, and then the economic policies just deal with economic things. It's stolen some of their policies. It's moved around some policies as well, because you've still got the militaristic ones, but I've kind of had a good look at those, added a few, again, stolen from JFK, but managed to get some quite unique-looking things in there. So, yeah, that's all different too. And Lightner, I said, it is actually a different game, and he's quite right. It's not a case of me just relabeling everything so that it looks ancient worldish. It's really had, you know, really tried to make it a different experience, and hopefully you'll like it. So has anyone played it yet? And you're going to say, no, not actually, but
I mean, I discovered it just from the re-upload and just was amazed just going through it, looking just the tech tree, doing an advanced era start just to like build everything and see what it does.
Yeah.
It's a lot of things and very interesting approaches, especially to just how a civilization develops, right? So yeah. What kind of systems exist in a society that make people go from A to B in terms of knowledge and their economic lives and what else?
Yeah, I haven't played the new version because I've been busy with Mappa Mundi, but the Anno Domini just kind of takes the part of the game of civilization that I've always found the most interesting, the kind of ancient and classical eras, and makes the whole game that, which I absolutely love. So I think it's a fantastic mod.
Thank you. I actually, to get it really going, I spent 3 weeks just solidly on holiday just doing that. It was my morning, afternoon and night for those 3 weeks, but also before that I'd done quite a bit as well, but I found if I was going to really get it off the ground and just needed to have some solid time that I put to one side that I could just really spend on the mod and make sure it was as good as I could do it. I mean, now I've got this week coming up to sort of go back and fill in some of the gaps. So in my job, I work in what's known as an agile manner. I don't know if anybody's come across that perspective before, but it's basically getting out a product there that is as good as it can be, but rather than doing the complete journey, and you know, the idea is that if you've got a product that's going to take a year to create, then rather than the customer having to wait that full year before they get the product, they could get something within about 3 months that's kind of basically the outline of the product. It's quite decent, that it's a working version, and over the rest of the year they get things added to that so that they get more and more functionality with it until they've got full products at the end of the year. And that's kind of the approach that I've taken with Anno Domini. It's currently a mod that you can play. It's a complete game, but it does have a few things that I'd love to go back in and fill out. Things like, you know, the Mappa Mundi is going to help, and the compatibility to the maps pack, the compatibility to one or two other mods, the fact that there's some art gaps somewhere, for example the historical moment art. So those things don't prevent you from playing it, but the experience of playing it is going to be enhanced as we go along. And I think as well, now that it's out there, hopefully other modders will say, do you know what, I'm going to do something that could be used with Anno Domini as well. I know that there's one Civ that's on its way which I can't talk about at the moment, and that will be donated to, well, it'd be created on the workshop first, but the creator said as soon as it's out, bang it in. So yes, that's another little civilization there that I have to do very little to actually make it compatible. That's really good. I think as well, perhaps from, I think I'm right in saying this, I think that people that create civilizations, and I've done a couple of civilizations myself, I mean, it's nice for them to see how their civilization actually works in a different setup as well. So it's good for the guys to see how a cab fares in an ancient world mod as well as in the epic game, I think. I think people quite are intrigued by it, I don't know. Maybe I'm just imagining that.
It's hard to say because, of course, my mods are not eligible.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It would be interesting to see, though.
Well, mine really aren't eligible either. And, well, the one was broken completely by Rise and Fall, so.
Rise and Fall, okay.
Yeah. And irretrievably broken, pretty much.
Have you ever thought of doing anything like Scipio, where it was quite a different approach to that you took in Civ 5 to creating a leader? Have you any thoughts about maybe doing something like that for Civ 6?
I might, but I'd have to get this other thing done first.
Okay.
Or at least get it, like you're talking about, into a releasable state to where then I can later go back and add in some other stuff in addition.
Yeah.
One of the Civs that I've been kicking around an idea for have been the Minoans. Been kicking around ideas for them for like 2 years. Years now. Gathering Storm might actually convince me to finish that.
Yeah, and I mean, those would go great in Anno Domini, right?
Yeah.
Well, that would be brilliant. Well,
although, if I could make unique governors,
yeah,
that would basically be what Scipio was for Civ 5.
Yeah. But it was, wasn't it? You never know. That might have given them the idea for governor.
Well, I stole it from... I was inspired by Total War for that. And I think probably Phyrexis was inspired by that. And Master of Orion had governors before that. And there was another game that was based in old DOS days from like the early 90s that had some kind of governor thing, if I remember right. That was similar. So I don't know if they stole it from me, but I can claim that, I guess.
You could indeed. I think you get somewhere with that.
That's what the rest of it is, right?
Yeah, I think the place I would get with that would be court.
I know. Do we want to quickly have a quick chat with Jan just about, you know, who he is, where he came from, or do we want to just wrap up instead?
Hey, so to Jan, what do you want to do, Jan?
Yeah, sure. We can do a quick rundown.
Okay, go for it.
Well, there isn't much. So, basically, in terms of Civ, what I did before was two pretty simple Civs for 5, just to learn the whole system, which are hidden now because I didn't support them for future or for the later expansions, and people kept bringing up error messages. Okay. And so that's pretty much the only thing I ever did around Civ. But I, like, when I got back to it now, and I saw that, you know, there's DDS files for textures and what else, and, you know, the basics with Blender, that I'm trying to reactivate those skills. And instead, like, many years ago in my teenage years, I did some smaller stuff for Oblivion, which was kind of a very accessible game in terms of modding back then. And the SD series kind of got more and more as you basically had to be a full-time developer to nowadays be able to do anything meaningful with, let's say, Fallout 4. I realized that, hey, Civ is this game that just fits me and, you know, also my kind of my personal background with political sciences, social sciences more, where I just can apply that and think about, yeah, how do these systems as a whole work, and also just a modding community that honestly is a lot more friendly. Like, I know many around Fallout 4 quit because they kept being harassed. Release this for this platform, release this for that, why don't you do that? And people were stealing assets and what else. And so far, I've had a great experience around people in Civ, so I decided to stick around and try my best here.
Okay. Well, the one thing I didn't like about what you said there was many years ago when I was a teenager and Oblivion came out, because I was in my own.
Because Rob was not a teenager when Oblivion came out. Were you a teenager when
I was about 41.
Oh, okay. I don't remember if I was a teenager, but
I'm kidding. Don't worry.
Were you a teenager when Arena came out, Rob, or when Morrowind came out?
Was I a teenager when what?
When Arena or Morrowind came out?
Morrowind. Crikey, when was that? That was 2002. I was 37 then. So,
yeah, Rob and I were teenagers when Teenage of the Movie.
The one came out.
Pitfall came out. Yeah, that would be the
No, not analogy. Games. Think the original Space Invaders game. Yeah. You put the quarters in. We were teenagers then.
Yeah, that's when I was a teenager. And there was only one place that had it, and that was a corner shop that was about a mile away. And that was 1978 when I was 13, and that was brilliant. That was then.
So we've come full circle when kids nowadays have to insert money again every minute to keep playing on their microtransactions.
Yeah. Now you have to put the money in to get the loot box.
Yeah,
except instead of stealing quarters from their dad's jar, dad sees a bill at the end of the month, like, where did that come from?
Yeah. There's not much difference between putting quarters into a machine and paying to speed up your, I don't know, unit building in a mobile game or whatever.
Yeah, wonders.
We have customers complain at the bank and say, I've had this thing on the bill here and it's nothing to do with me. It says something called Steam. There's no way. You know, it's only small things at a time, about $1.99, but I know I've nothing to do with Steam. Can you tell me more about that, please? You got a teenage child? Yes. Right.
That's your answer.
Ask them first, see what they say, and then come back to us.
And then ground them.
And then you hear, get here. In the back, as the phone goes down, you think, okay. Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-7659.
121-288, Polly.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows Polycast, Revcast, Civcast and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Right, so, any more for any more?
No, not really. The only other possibility I think we might talk about next episode, but it all depends on whether I'm ready or not.
Okay. Which is?
That thing I'm working on.
Oh, right. So that's coming soon. And coming soon on the next episode could be more from Anno Domini. See what I've done in this last week. And also on the next episode, Narai will talk. So...
No.
Only kidding. Know that. So shall we wrap up then?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so thank you for joining us on Modcast this afternoon, the 23rd of February 2019. On the show with me today were
Jane R.
Lee S.
Rather Forgiven.
The Crazy Scotsman.
Fantastic. Thanks everybody. Goodbye.
Civilization 4, 5, Beyond Earth, and 6 Sound Clips Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright the Polycast at thepolycast.net.